This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Got a really interesting episode for you today. We're talking to a business improvement coach, consultant, kind of project management specialist. And I met this lady through kind of business networking, and lots of stuff she should talk about so closely relate to what we do at Risk Fluent and what we talk about here at Rebranding Safety. So we thought, let's get that lady on the podcast. Let's jump into the intro, tell you some more about it.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution or one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety. Crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Fluent.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is a YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. So if you're new here, hit that subscribe button and the bell and the magical algorithm buttony thingamajigs. My name's James McPherson. I am the host for today, and I also run a company called Risk Fluent LTD. And our purpose is to rebrand safety, even though that is kind of what we are trying to do. So that's us in a nutshell. If you need any help, technical safety, cultural safety, fire safety, whatever it is, we can help you out. Check out riskfluentltd.com or email me, james@riskfluentltd.com. If you can't remember that, all the links are in the description below. So today we're talking to a lovely lady who does kind of business improvement, project management type stuff. And I thought, you know what? Safety manages projects so often, like lots of what we do, whether we're rolling out a cultural change program, whether we're rolling out a new piece of tech, whether we're trying to, redesign our risk assessments, whether we're trying to improve a specific process after an incident or whatever it is, a lot of what safety does is projects. So I was like, why don't we talk about projects and our qualifications? I mean, it's not like our qualifications fail us in any other way, is it? Here's just one thing they don't cover. Unfortunately, we don't really talk about project management very much. So I thought, right, let's get Liz on. We can talk about project management. We can talk about business improvement and how we can take the ideas of project management and business improvement to help us manage safety so much better. So hopefully you get something out of this. I won't waffle on anymore. I'll let Liz introduce herself and we'll get into a conversation around business improvement and project management. Let's go. Liz, welcome to the podcast. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, James.
No worries. Do you want to introduce yourself? Because I know you quite well now, but obviously the listeners won't know who you are.
Of course, no problem. Although I would quite enjoy listening to how you would introduce me. But yes, I'll take the safest option and do it myself, shall I?
Used to do that. I used to ask guests, we spoke about this on Thursday last week. I used to ask guests to send us a bio and then I'll read it out. It's like the cringiest thing ever. So I just don't do it anymore.
No, that's fine. And at least I'd rather do it myself anyway than you make it up. God knows what you would say. But yeah. So I'm Liz Higginson. I'm a management consultant and project professional with a record of delivering large scale, high priority projects and programs predominantly within the finance industry to achieve business outcomes. So I've worked on my career. I've spent about the last 18 years in the finance industry, working across, as I say, a number of different transformational changes, spanning across things changing of operating models, to technology changes, to more cheap people change, regulatory change, data-driven change, quite technical ones to do with things like APIs and things like that, with all the technical advancements that are taking place nowadays. Working both in your more traditional methodologies, kind of like waterfall approaches with projects, to more agile methodologies for more of your product teams and your sprints where you're doing your digital, especially more in the digital space for your apps and things like that. So I have a real passion for working with people and leading people. I think you'll probably you already know this, James, but people are at the heart of everything that we do. And so we're not quite there yet with having 100% automated organisations. So we do need to consider our people. We need to consider the experience, the environment and the journey that we take them on. And yeah, a couple of years ago, I left working in the kind of like corporate world and started my own business. So 144 Complete Business Development. I've done that for the last couple of years now. And I'm an independent consultant that looks to support businesses with their training and also their business consultancy needs.
Grand. Grand. And when we first kind of had a coffee meeting, we were just kind of geeking out on organizational failure and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, all about the OD, organizational development, culture. All should we start a that's a big one to start with, isn't it, James?
Yeah, maybe not, let's not go there. Yeah. You get an insight into the safety profession when you start talking about culture as well. Jesus.
Yes.
We just bicker with each other, that's all we do. So one of the reasons I thought, you know what, I mean, there's a lot of things that we do, as we were talking before we press record, that are very similar and really closely aligned. But there was, you're doing a lot of work around project management at the moment. And obviously we get to see a lot of what you do at 144. And I thought, you know what, safety does so many kind of projects. Like, I've done so many projects in my career, and many other safety professionals be the same, never actually had any form of project management training or even could tell you how to manage a project other than, like, you know, lick of a finger and shove it in the air kind of thing. So I thought it'd be really interesting to get you on, just kind of really let's have a chat about what project management is and how we can do it well and how maybe we can examples of not doing it well and so on and so forth. But I thought might be the best place to start would be to actually understand what a project is, because I think we banned the term project around left, right and center, but like from a project management kind of specialist, in a way, if you're comfortable with that phrase, like how would you define a project?
Yeah, no problem. And it makes sense, because in reality, you either hear projects being bandied about in every context, shape or form, everything's a project, or you find that people are involved in projects or involved in project activity, but it's not labelled as a project. It's they're not, you know, in regards to their day job or even their job title, there's no concept of this, and it's just kind of like side of the desk activity. So then it's not getting the focus that it needs. So it kind of goes one or two ways. But how would I define a project? So a project, it's a unique set of activities with a specified timeline. So it's not indefinite, it's for a period of time. It's being undertaken to bring about some form of change. Okay, so a project needs to change. So you're currently in state A, you want to get to state B or whatever. So the project is span up to move you from A to B. So it'll have a set of planned objectives that it's planning to achieve. Project work is generally conducted across all areas of business. It's not a specific area, it's across all areas of business. It's about understanding within the business what the whole system is and what changes need to be made and how they impact and influence each other, and therefore your project should span across that whole piece. And what you then do is set up temporary teams. So again, quite a key thing for a project is it's not your normal standard teams, it's a temporary team that comes together based on the skills, knowledge, experience that is needed to deliver whatever those achieved outcomes and objectives are. So the team's spun up to deliver that project over a period of time. And generally, a project would be deemed to be successful if it achieved its acceptance criteria. So when you sat down with stakeholders and said, okay, so what are the business benefits? What are we trying to do here? And what does good look like? You'd form your set of acceptance criteria for the project to be handed over into business as usual. And generally, if a project achieves that acceptance criteria, you know, normally within its kind of like the specified timeline and budget that's been given, it'd be deemed as a successful project.
Yeah.
The project would then kind of close down and you'd move on to the next thing. I suppose a key thing to consider is that for nowadays, well, it's not even nowadays, it's all the time really, isn't it? Every organisation no matter how large or small you are. And we were just kind of talking about this earlier, weren't we, James? Doesn't matter if you're a one-man band or you employ, you know, 20,000 plus people. Every organisation is faced with the fact that the environment is constantly changing around us day by day. Size, scale and complexity of the changes will be different, but things are changing. And this, in reality, does create challenges for businesses, but it also creates opportunities for businesses, and it also drives a business need for them to do things. And therefore, the project really is almost like the response from the business to either minimize the threat or to maximize any potential opportunities that can come out of it, or just to address the business need. So that's kind of whatever is changing in the environment that they're operating in.
Okay. Yeah, which I think fundamentally is pretty much what safety does all the time. Like, yeah. I think we manage the doing of the normal stuff, but I think safety for a long time has been battling with this, like, I don't know, I've been saying for a while that safety is kind of going through like a bit of an identity crisis, and that, like, okay, really sure what we're doing, but like ultimately, no matter where you sit in that said identity crisis, there will be a project of improvement or driving change at some point within your career.
Yeah,
100%.
And I think one of the key things for me that I observe, and it's not just about safety, this hits other disciplines and other aspects of business as well, but it's this mindset shift that we need to make of starting to move things from the right more to the left. And what I mean by that is, you know, when we're sitting down and we're seeing, oh my God, this has happened over there, therefore we need to spin up a project because we need to change the business to respond to that, we need to be considering at the beginning who are the key stakeholders that need to be involved in that, who can influence the project, which areas are going to be impacted that need to be involved. And specifically for safety professionals, we should be considering that as one of those stakeholders that are key to being in the room from the very beginning, because obviously when we start to think about the different controls in relation to safety for any projects that are delivering, but also during that period, if you're changing things, you know, in an organization, you're going to have interim states, and each state, when something changes and looks different for people, for employees, you know, do we need to consider the safety implications of that? And so therefore the journey of the safety process needs to constantly change to reflect as well. So what I mean by that is, if we can start to have a mindset where we're bringing these individuals in earlier, it becomes more of a proactive strategy rather than a reactive response to, oh, we've done this and I don't know, something's broken and an employee's got hurt, or, you know, or technology's gone down, or we failed some kind of audit or check because of X, Y, and Z. You know, we've not got the right safety material resources in the building, kind of thing, for the number of people that are in there, or whatever it might be, as you're going through your interim states, because it's not been considered. And that's what we need to do. It's not just start and end, it's the whole journey.
Yeah. I want to come back to stakeholders because I think that's quite important, and something that I think the audience would definitely get value from talking about. There was something we were talking about this before we pressed record, and I'm curious to maybe talk about it again, because we were talking about it maybe from like a business, managing and running a business perspective. Yeah. But also I think safety suffers from something quite similar, in that knowing when we need to have a project to change, like knowing that it's all right as it is. Yeah, we'd like to have this big change and all this, but we're not kind of where we are right now. So I hear quite a lot like, oh, James, we'd love to get Risk Fluent in and do this big coach, but we're just not ready yet. And I'm like, well, how do we know when you're ready? Like, what does ready look like for you? And I think many, many safety people, or if the project is from a safety perspective, typically what we're always talking about is reduction in harm, right? So we're always trying to reduce injuries, reduce accidents, and so on and so forth.
So if as a company you're performing quite well from a point of view of incidents and accident, we rest on our laurels in a way, and we say we're safe because we're not killing anybody. But as a profession, we're starting to really understand that, you know, the absence of accidents isn't necessarily an automatic precursor for the presence of safety in a way. So it might be that actually a lot of companies need to drive a project, but they don't know they need to drive a project. So like, yeah. And you don't have to come at this from a safety point of view, but like how, when you're talking to prospective clients or whoever, how are you kind of getting them to a point where they understand that they do need to do a project to drive change or something like that?
Yeah, it's a really good question, James. And I think, you know, one way is to actually look, understand with the business, well, where is it you're trying to get to from, you know, what is your business strategy? You're here today. What is your ambitions? Where do you want to be in 18 months, 2 years, 3 years? And then understanding, once you understand kind of like what that aspiration is, and the strategic growth that needs to take place, you can then start to ask the questions around, and who's in control of getting you there? Is that all within your gift, or are you relying on third parties, suppliers, partners, you know, different members of team within your business, different technologies, you know, in order to achieve your strategy, are you going to have to implement new technologies, new platforms, things like that to be able to do what, you know, to be able to achieve that growth? Mm-hmm. So trying to understand that, then you start to be able to have the conversation, okay, around, so, okay, if they say you want to go and this is all the stuff that you need to do to get you there, you can start to kind of measure success. But ultimately, then you can start to ask the questions around, well, do you have the capability to do that? So if getting you from A to B requires the implementation of new processes and new technologies, do you have the capabilities in-house to actually deliver those projects? So to deliver the new technologies, the new processes, do you have the capabilities in-house to do all the business readiness activities around working with the teams to give them the new skills that they're going to need to be able to use the new technologies, the new processes, all the communication around what's coming, when it's coming, when we stop using the old ways of working, when we need to adopt the new ways of working, those kind of things, you know, because if they do, then great. If they don't, then that's, and in reality, you'll probably find they don't, but they think that they can kind of like, because what we see a lot is, well, we'll do it off the side of the desk, or, you know, I've got an assistant or whoever it might be. So, and, you know, Bob's got a bit of spare time, so we'll use him. But one thing that I always say to people is, you know, time is not a skill, and we shouldn't resource key critical activities based on availability. We should be resourcing activity based on skill, knowledge and experience that's needed, because otherwise that's where mistakes can happen. So it's actually understanding that whole picture and then trying to get the business owner to understand the need. Now, there's going to be situations where that's a lot easier to happen. So if there's things happening, so if it's a regulatory change, so if all of a sudden in the health and safety industry, they change the parameters around how many, you know, the fire rules of how many fire blankets and hoses that you need per number of people in a building, for example, that's quite an easy project to quantify to a business that they need to implement, you know, because you're no longer going to achieve regulatory standards. So things like that are a lot easier to kind of sell. It's more of the innovative or creative or the stuff around, you know, trying to get business owners to see that actually, if your people are more happy in their job, they're more productive. If they're more productive, the customer service is better. If customer service is better, then your balance sheet's going to be better, kind of thing. So kind of transformational change or cultural change. Got it in, talk that, get straight onto culture. But cultural change and people change is always a little bit harder, because what you're trying to do is get them is kind of link it up. But again, go through the same process. What are the benefits? What are the changes you need to make? Do you really have the skills in-house to be able to do that? Because the other thing is, if you are really motivated, you know, for something to change, to be different, whether that's an external factor applying pressure to your business or internal influences that are making you want to do it, there's it's almost like if you're only going to chuck a little bit of money at it on an ongoing basis, but you never really chuck in enough money or enough focus to actually reach the benefit of what you're aiming for, in a way you might as well just set fire to the money, really. You would be better off actually being committed 110% to it. You'll deliver quicker, so in the long run it will save you money, and obviously you'll then start to realize the benefits earlier, ultimately improving the business.
There was something else you kind of, which I think might help understand that there might be benefit in having a change project of some sort. And when you were kind of talking about, again, we were talking about it off air.
Station. Got a big red button on the side of your wall right now that says on air,
I wish I did, from honest. Like, I want a big on air kind of button.
Shows how long ago I did a podcast, wasn't it? The last podcast I did, sorry, James, just to interrupt. Yeah. I went into a dark room, microphone in the middle. It was like a navy blue dark room. Yeah. Microphone in the middle, two chairs. No camera, with a big red thing that said on air. And I was like, oh, nowadays it's totally different, isn't it? You sit in the comfort of your own home, video on. How things change, hey? How things change.
Yeah, it's very weird. I'd like to have a studio one day, or yeah, like the office with a studio set up in the corner or something. Yeah. People kind of sit down and have a chat or whatever. But yeah, I'd like to do it not on Zoom and have proper guests.
There could be a goal for you in the next 12 months. Rather than being here, I want to be here, and then work out what do you need to do to get you to there.
Yeah, but it definitely won't have a dark room with some freaking curtains and shit.
Yeah, now I've said that, it's made it sound quite scary, doesn't it? You're probably thinking, what kind of a podcast was that? I'll tell you that one off air.
Oh, I've completely forgot where I was going with this. So was one thing that I thought was quite curious when we were off air, that you were kind of talking about, you know, how often does a business kind of really just kind of draw out their business and all of the kind of interconnecting parts? So, or like, if you imagine an organization, it's kind of like a web, right? And you've got like this department, this process, this thing, and all of those things are attached. And you were saying that when you kind of do that with an organization and you kind of zoom out, you can really see, oh, look, actually, the reason we need to change this is because even though with this problem that we're having is down here, it could be being impacted by this thing that's like four or five levels up this process change, which I really liked. Like, I wonder if you could kind of talk maybe a little bit more about that.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, what we're talking about here is kind of a high level understanding the operating model of your business. Mm-hmm. And we all think we do know our businesses, and we do. We are experts of our own businesses, but it's about how all of the pieces connect together. So it's like a jigsaw, isn't it, the business? And it's how it all comes together. And what we don't necessarily always know off the top of our heads or always recognize, so potentially we're not using this information to inform our decision making as when we're running our businesses, is how everything connects, so how the dots line up. So understanding that golden thread allows you to be to use that information to make informed decisions about, you know, what clients you work with, what suppliers you use, what kind of projects you take on, and things like that. So what we're talking about really is at a high level, understanding what your operating model canvas looks like. So considering, you know, kind of like, where are all your working locations? So if you've got offices or factories or warehouses, or if you're all just working remotely from home, whatever it might be, but understanding what that is, how many partners or third parties you have, what are the services and the products that you offer at a high level. Then kind of underneath that, starting to think around, okay, so what's the technology and the processes that we need to be able to deliver our standard operating procedures? So what kind of technology do we need? What kind of processes do we need to build? Then taking it down a next level to kind of say, okay, so what's from a people perspective, what kind of framework have we got in place from a kind of like a development point of view, a management point of view? So what kind of approach are we taking to software, people management? What's the kind of culture? What are we trying to, are we a kind of a very much a kind of like a learning organization? So is that the kind of approach we're taking? And therefore we need to drip feed that into all of our processes around our people and how we develop and grow them. Kind of thing. So looking at it from a people perspective, but then also starting to look at from a management information perspective, what kind of management information do you need to run your business effectively? So that could be financial, it could be people related, it could be to do with third parties, could be to do with processes, quality. You know, quality would be a big one in the safety, for safety professionals, in the sense of if you're not achieving quality standards, that could have multiple impacts, but one of them could be very much safety specific. And then kind of underneath all of that, you kind of start to think about, okay, so what are the management controls? So what are the different strategies? What's our kind of business strategy? What's our, you know, if you have staff working for you, what's the kind of like learning development strategy? What's the career progression framework? How does that look? But also then, you know, what are your values? What's the culture for the culture of your organization? Any internal controls that you have in place, but also any regulatory controls, anything, regulatory controls or standards that you need to adopt for how you run your business. So it doesn't need to be an overstrenuous exercise. Piece of paper, kind of sketch it out. Key things, it might be as simple as two sites. We've got 13 suppliers, five partners. We offer two different products and three different services. We've got two different technologies and we've got 15 processes. You know, what are they? We've got a, you know, we manage our, these are our ways of working. So we have monthly one-to-ones or whatever it might be, but high level kind of break that down. And then what that allows you to do is start to understand how your business actually operates. So then if, for example, I said to you, James, oh, sorry, we're no longer going to use Risk Fluent for that service. You would then think, well, actually, Liz, you are the only customer of ours that use that service. And actually, it's not been that effective. You don't want it anymore. We don't want to offer it anymore. So we're going to can it. Yeah. So you can that. But now you understand, oh, actually, if we're no longer offering that service, those technologies that we procured to provide us with management information to be able to manage that client, or to be able to service that client kind of thing, we don't need that anymore. So those licenses, we can cancel all of that. And therefore that operational cost of those licenses, we can get rid of and we can So you see what I mean? It just allows the business to see the whole system and what needs to change. Because what you often find is that businesses implement change, and then at some point in the future, there's lots of kind of like historical systems that are still in place, or it might be the end of the year when your accountant looks at the kind of pulling the books together and kind of set like the final set of books and kind of says, well, these are all your operational costs, all your licensing costs for your hardware or your IT, whatever. And it might, I only use Microsoft Zero a lot. 365 nowadays. I don't have any other special requirements. Oh, okay, well, you're spending quite a bit of money, you know. And it's these things again that can make you more effective and more efficient within your business, but you're not actually necessarily changing anything. You're just working a little bit smarter because you understand the landscape of your business, so you can make those informed decisions. Yeah. Does that make sense?
No, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think one of the things that we've been trying to talk more about in safety and risk management is a bit more of a systems thinking approach of understanding that what we're operating within is essentially a system that has both social, e.g. people, and technical aspects, e.g. like process and IT and tech and so on and so forth. So being able to, I think, put that system, of which safety is a huge part of it, and if one of your outcomes is a safe operation or a safe task or whatever, or a well-managed task, for example, understanding all the components throughout that process that contribute to that outcome, I think is phenomenally important.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. And I think one of the coming to the system thinking approach, especially when you're kind of looking at your organizational design, you've got your seven aspects, but they all need to link up and they do need to work. Because if your culture is one of a kind of like more of a people-centered approach that's more around coaching and development. You know, we're a learning organization, so that's the kind of culture we're bringing. It's very much test, learn and adapt kind of thing versus a command and control style, should we say. You know, you need to make sure then that that folds, that that fizzles through into everything from, you know, with your strategy, your processes or your people elements, the technology, etc., and just generally ways of working. Because otherwise what you'll find is when something goes wrong, you won't walk the talk. In other words, there'll be knee-jerk reactions and all of a sudden people will behave in a certain way that is not what is expected. So it all has to match. And that's why you need to understand how the whole business operates, really, because as soon as you start to lose that trust, people will refrain and will think, well, next time I'm not going to do that because I'm being told that, you know, we've got to try these things and learning is a good thing and failure is not a bad thing. It's learning, you know, so we know not to take that approach next time. But actually when something went wrong, you know, a ton of bricks fell down on me and where was everyone to protect me kind of thing. So you do need to make sure sometimes we think very focused. A lot of the time we're very focused on what's the technology that we need or what are the processes, but actually we need to think about all elements of that. What's the strategy? What's the culture? What are the people side? Because it all needs to come together to be successful. If you've got the wrong leadership or that, you know, or a leadership style that doesn't align nicely with the culture and the ways of working and what the business goals and priorities are, then again, it's not going to work, if that makes sense. So it does all need to sit together. And safety is another thing. You want to look at it like, I know you personally, I know you, James, and there's probably a lot of safety professionals out there that feel the same, want to move away from just a tick box exercise. We've got a checklist and we have to do these things, you know. And I fully 110% agree with that. You know, if you're I often say this to a lot of people, why are you doing that? And if someone can't tell me an answer, or the answer is, oh, because my process says I need to, or the checklist tells me I need to, but there's no actual value add to it, I would challenge that in a constructive way. Well, then we need to revisit the process. We need to understand why, you know, because all you're doing, you're not, by having a load of checklists or a process that's ticking a load of boxes, if it's not actually value add, you're not really going to reach the outcome that you want to, are you? And in a safety world, it doesn't matter if you've got 500 checklists that have all been signed off to say we've done all the tests. If the production line has failed and caused massive harm to all of the people that are working on it, those checklists are not really going to mean much, are they?
Yeah. They just clutter. Kind of what you were talking about is very similar to something we've been talking about quite a lot within the safety profession, is a clutter in the system. And
yep, wastage.
There was three. Yeah, so there's a paper in the safety kind of academia called Safety Clutter. So it's looking at cluttered systems, but very much focused on safety. And they kind of come at their three C's. So three C's that you can use as a test. So I was just getting them on my phone whilst you were talking, because I thought it resonated with what you were talking about. So what's the contribution? So what's it contributing to? E.g., your point, is it value added? Where's your confidence coming from that it's going to work? E.g., is that coming from evidence of something you've done or someone else has done or academia? Or is it coming from a belief? In that you believe this is the right thing to do,
because it's just what's always been done before, because that's a lot, well, that's what we do.
Where is that confidence coming from? And then consensus. So are the stakeholders, which kind of brings us quite nicely onto what you mentioned earlier of stakeholders, are the stakeholders kind of agreeing that yes, this is the right way to go? Which I'd really like those three C's of a very simple test.
I like it, and it does relate very well, because what I talk about is the removal of waste in the system. you know, and that waste can be lots of different things. It can be time. So it can be where, you know, between where one team hands work off to the next team and it kind of sits in a hole for 3 or 4 days before it gets picked up. So it can be removing that kind of waste. Mm-hmm. It can be removing waste in processes where you're doing activities that adds, like you say, absolutely no value, but it's just always been done that way. So we'll do it anyway. It's removing waste of, you know, where you're losing money and things like that. So yeah, it's all very similar, same theory. So yeah, I totally agree with that. And it makes a difference. And it comes back to then the people, because again, it's this kind of thing of if people feel like they're doing a value add job, they're contributing, they're more motivated and therefore they're more productive. If they realize what they're, if they can see, if they can understand, if they've got clarity around why they're doing things, the purpose and what the action, what they're hoping to achieve at the end of it, again, they're a lot more motivated and productive to doing their jobs. So yeah, it comes, there's a lot of benefits to it.
Yeah. And I think the value of why I quite like your description of kind of essentially painting the operating model of an organization to we can, I think it's really nice to see something visually. Like, yeah. We do quite a lot of work with organizations and I like me post it. So I'll pretty much post it out a process, right?
Can't be a post it and a Sharpie.
Can't be a post-it and a Sharpie, right? So, but like, there's nothing better than, I remember once doing this process, so we're kind of trying to learn and improve the safety aspects of a process. So we're trying to learn about what works well and what doesn't work well. And we just focus on one very focused, simple task that they do within this organization. And the amount of post-its on the wall was phenomenal. And the kind of area manager had to dip out and come back in. So I think he had to pop to the doctors or whatever. Not relevant, doesn't matter. Anyway, and he come back maybe like an hour later. And I remember he walked in and he looked at the wall and he was like,
wow.
Fuck me, is that one lift? And we were like, yeah. And it was amazing to be able to see all of these good things that are going on and all of these potential weaknesses. And it's difficult as well. I think sometimes we focus just on like, this is positive and this is negative. And I didn't think it was as simple as that. These are just potential weaknesses and these are strengths or potential strengths, so to speak. But I really like that notion of having it visible. And interestingly, I think it's something that we've experienced since starting a business. So when we started consulting, I'm not a massive fan of I won't say the brand names, we'll just for the sake of my not pissing anyone off, but also there's some like mini accreditation schemes within safety,
okay,
that are, in my opinion, very much about, in the beginning, I couldn't see any value in it. I was like, it's just ticking a box. It's just badge collecting. It doesn't make the job safer. And so I was like, we're not going to do it. And we ended up actually turning away a lot of work, right? So we don't do it. And it was like quite painful as a business, as a new business. You're like, why are we turning away all this work? Like, this is really hard. And we kind of... I remember coming back to the safety clutter paper and we did a lot of work around values and purpose and stuff, which you've mentioned, and I want to come in on that in a minute. I'm really kind of challenged ourselves to think about, okay, what we're trying to do is do work that delivers value. And the second we kind of defined that's what we're trying to do, is delivers impact on the business, we were like, hang on a minute. This thing, this little mini accreditation, it doesn't deliver value, in our opinion, to the shop floor. However, what it does do is enable the business to be able to tender for the job. And if they can't tender for the job, they're not a business, then they're just not going to get any work. So, and the reason I brought this up is because I think safety's, and that's just one example of how I've fallen victim to it. We've fallen victim a little bit to forgetting that there are multiple aspects of safety. Primarily what we're trying to do is make the workplace a safer place so people don't hurt themselves, die, or become ill because of work. Of course, that's our primary focus. However, there are things that we do that deliver value to the company that aren't actually specifically focused on the safety of work. And I think when you were talking about painting the system, painting the operating model so you can see it, would probably enable safety professionals to be able to understand that a little bit more. Because when we did.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. Totally agree. And it does. And all we're really trying to do here is bring about more understanding and awareness of what's going on. So we all go into work every day. Yeah, we know how work works. We know what we're doing. But as I say, sometimes we're that busy doing the doing, or sometimes we only have visibility of certain aspects. It's not the whole picture. And so it's about trying to understand that whole picture. And it's a bit like the butterfly effect, isn't it? You know, my actions over here, what's the effect going to be down here? And that's where you start to see issues. You know, for example, technology. Well, we talked about earlier, didn't we, about I won't mention the brand, but a big technology giant went down this morning. You know, it could be something severe like a hacker or, you know, whatever, but it could be something as simple as somebody has implemented something overnight, a project, and it's knocked something out. It's not been tested effectively, or something's gone wrong and it's knocked it out, and it's taken them a good few hours to get it back up and running. And these are the kind of things that if we understand the whole picture, we minimize the impact of those things happening, because the actual result we want is we don't want any impact to customers. We don't want customers to be able to see that we're changing things. In the safety world, safety professionals, for you, a good job is when your clients don't need to see you almost per se, if you know what I mean, because nothing's going wrong. You want it to be that continuous working relationship where you're proactively changing, tweaking, innovating and adapting ways of working, so that they never have to call you up in a reactive way and say, oh my God, you know, the machine's just hurt somebody, so you need to come in and do a full review. You never want to get to that stage, do you? You want to, it's preventative as opposed to responsive when it happens. So I totally agree with you in the sense that understanding that full picture allows you to better understand what you need to do to manage that change more effectively.
I'm curious to come to the kind of understanding your values and principles and purpose of an organization, but maybe even as well purpose of a project that we're trying to achieve. Because to come back to that little story for us is that we kind of started off, we're not going to do this stuff. And then once we kind of really spent some critical kind of soul searching time on what are we trying to do, it enabled us to say, okay, we'll do that stuff. However, there's a caveat. We'll only do that if it's with a client that we're also getting time on the shop floor with, you know, like on a long-term partnership, so that we can actually do some safety work. So they're like, well, maybe how does that, it's still a bit tick boxy, isn't it? Yeah, it is. But it's kind of, we were able to look at it in a different way and say, we're taking it off of the client to do it for them and quicker. So we're decluttering their process, but we can't get rid of it because the world is the world and you can't turn it for that job without it. So, and a big part of being able to make that decision and understand that and make it kind of right for me, because really it was my own stubbornness that wouldn't let us do that work, make it feel comfortable for me, was really critically spending some time on, as an organization, what do we exist for and what are values and principles. So when we are understanding or running and managing a project, what is the value of a company's purpose and a company's values and stuff like that, and how much impact does that have on a project, for example?
Massive. Okay. Remind me to come back to that, because I just want to address your first point and then we'll talk about kind of purpose and vision. But what you were talking about there for you, that to me brings to life the difference between outputs and outcomes. Okay. So projects, programs, transformational change, you know, again, size, scale, complexity varies. Some will be about achieving certain outputs. Yeah. So it might be we need to do these five different projects. Each of the five different projects will give us a separate output, but we need all five outputs to take us on our journey to achieving the outcome that we want to achieve for the organization. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so outputs and outcomes are not the same thing. So in the story that you've just told, where you were talking about certain accreditations, doing certain checklists to be able to move you on to the next stage per se, those are almost outputs. Yeah. So we have to do this as an output to allow us to move on to the next stage. But the outcome of what the business wants to achieve is this. Yeah. So they're not really interested in all these bits along the way, but they have to do that for various reasons. So in your mind, it's a thing of, well, it's a non- it's a tick box exercise, it's not value add. No, you might be right, it might feel like that, but if the outcome is this and you want to achieve the outcome, you might have to jump through those hoops to get there. So it's about focusing on the outcome. And that's then when you start to think about, from a leadership perspective, the purpose for the organization, you need to start to consider, again, it's a change in mindset and a different leadership style, and it all comes down to communication. But you're moving away from focusing on tasks and outputs to actually focusing on the outcomes. So these are the outcomes that we want to achieve as an organization. It then becomes a lot more powerful. Okay. And that's when you're then starting to do more around, this is the vision, this is where we want to get to. And you're actually motivating your people to get on that journey and come with you. You're then starting to step away from necessarily being from management, in the sense of managing people day to day of, this is what you need to do, X, Y, and Z, fill this checklist out, do these activities or whatever it might be, because what you're focusing on is the outcome. So it's a thing of, actually, team, we need to achieve this outcome. I'm going to leave it to you guys to get on with that. So you're then moving away from managing more into the leadership space, where you're there, you're supporting, you're engaging your people, you're giving them the vision, talking through the purpose, you know, you're bringing people on that journey, but you're empowering them to work out for themselves within, don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about anarchy, within the framework and the parameters of what your business has already set up within your operating model, of your controls that are in place, but you're empowering your people to work out the best way of achieving those outcomes. Yeah. And one powerful, there's two really strong things in that. One, you're engaging with your people. So they're feeling valued. They're getting an opportunity to develop and grow, you know, so they're going to be a lot more productive and a lot more motivated. They're learning new things. You know, these are all tick boxes. People love, we're humans, we like this kind of stuff. Two, who knows how to do things better than the people on the ground doing the things? We might like to think we know things, you know, but actually, as a business owner or as a business leader or as part of a leadership team, you know, whatever size business you're operating in, a successful leader is someone who recognizes that they haven't got all the skills and all the knowledge. So they build their team with all of the different capabilities that they need to deliver their business. And therefore, if you want them to be successful, you need to step back and let them do that. You need to empower them to do that within the parameters that you set, you know, so they know when to come to you, you know, if things are going outside of those parameters, but you're there, you're supporting them, you're helping them. So it's allowing them to collaborate and be creative, and it's allowing you then to focus on what your job is, which is focusing on, these are the outcomes that we want to achieve in the future. How do we continue to keep taking people on that journey to get there? Does that make sense?
It definitely does, because I'm making shitloads of notes.
So. Oh, are you? Are you not recording this then? Like, you just listen back to it.
To it, so I just make notes.
That's okay. I'm just winding you up.
It is recorded, but I just don't like listening to it. Not because of the guest. Normally, it's a guest I want to listen to. It's just my fucking.
It's all right. It's all right. Do you need a ladder? Do you need a ladder to get out?
No, I quite like just wallowing in the bottom of these holes, if I'm honest. There's a lot of good in what you said in there, Liz. There's a little bit of bad. No, I'm joking.
Okay, go on. Hit me with the bad first. I like to look at it as constructive. As long as you can, it's constructive feedback, I know next time what to think about, what to say, what not to say.
I just realised what that sounded like when I said it. I doubled down on it. What I really like about this, if I continue to just use that story that we were using, is that those accreditations, if we were in our head to be like, it doesn't contribute to the safety of work, but if the safety of work is the outcome, and taking it off of the customer enables them to focus on actual risk management, it's an output that's enabling the outcome.
And that's the thing, some of them are enablers.
Yeah. What I really like about this is, I think this really helps, I think, the safety profession start to understand things that they've been battling with for a long time. Like, Like just one very simple example that I find a lot of people in safety struggle with, you know, who should own the risk assessment, right? Just an example. And it's probably
it gets talked a lot about in projects.
Yeah. So operations should own the risk assessment. Well, why have we got a safety team if they own the risk assessment? And we bicker back and forth, right? And I've been on many sides of this argument, and I kind of flip on one side of the fence to the other. And as you can imagine, I don't really sit on the fence. I like to pick a side and then just change sides randomly. And I'm kind of listening to what you're saying and thinking, do you know what? If safety team doing the writing, the booking, the organization, the collecting and arranging of the stakeholders, facilitating that conversation and enabling and doing the risk assessment, right, enables the outcome of the operational people owning the understanding of managing risk, e.g. the actual thought process of risk management and how do we do this job effectively but safely. If the output means that safety is the people that are the people that are writing, typing, and making sure it's in date and all of this stuff, like I'm totally okay with safety doing that. Like, and I think
taking you one step closer.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that for me makes a lot of sense. Is that if decluttering means if we can't get rid of something because we're required to have it, say, for example, you're required to write down a risk assessment after you've got five people, right? Now, technically, you're only supposed to record the significant findings, but everyone fucking struggles with that. So let's just go with, once you have five people, you have to write a risk assessment. Let's just go with that to keep this conversation simple. So we have to write the risk assessment. That's clutter. There's loads of fucking paperwork everywhere. How do we manage this? Ops are busy doing what they do. Now, if it means that we can't get rid of it, so we can't declutter it, but what we can do is remove that clutter from the operational people so that they can understand how they're involved in the process because they need to, but ultimately they are enabled to just do the job effectively and effectively be in safety. For me, that sits really nice.
Because I think what you're talking about there, and I do totally agree with you, and it is predominantly the difference between outputs and outcomes. And I do have this conversation a lot because we do seem to be very focused on the output, the actual task, which is just the process. Yeah, it's the process to get you to somewhere and we focus more on that than the outcome. And the outcome will be more around the behavioral change or the transformational change that you're trying to achieve. And it's like, let's focus on that. But it's not always as easy to kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for, to be able to describe what that is. Do you know what I mean? So it's easier to focus on the outputs. But what you really need, and these are some of the things you need to consider, especially for safety professionals, but also, you know, for any professionals working in a project environment. Remember what we talked about at the very beginning about what's the definition of a project. And we talked about it's, you know, a project doesn't sit in one particular area in a business. It spans across the whole business dependent on what areas are impacted. Okay. So for us, one of our biggest challenges is about the visibility of everything that's going on. It's not always possible to have that visibility of everything. Mm-hmm. There could be, you know, it could be impact, it could be affecting business areas that, you know, can't share information with you for sensitive reasons or confidential reasons, or you're working with other people that don't understand how the operating model of the business, they don't understand the canvas that we've talked about. So therefore, they don't realize that they're holding key information that you need to know, so they never consider to share it, if you know what I mean. So that visibility piece is what we're trying to really tackle. Okay, so what you're trying to do is bring around, it's two ways, it's a two-way conversation, and this is where collaboration, which is what I love, comes into play, because not only are you trying to make sure that you've got a good understanding of what's going on in the landscape, so you've got all that visibility, you're trying to make sure that you're understanding what your stakeholder needs are, you know, because if you understand that, then you can help them to understand what they need, if you know, if that makes sense. There'll be different agendas at play, there'll be different outcomes that are trying to be achieved, especially the larger the organization, you know, where you've got lots of different business areas involved that are all by different people. it's not all Bob wearing the same, you know, just changing his hat kind of thing. It's more, you've got, you know, leadership teams of multiple different heads of, for example. That's where everybody for their business area will have an outcome that they're wanting to achieve from this change. And you therefore need to understand that. And the from a safety perspective, it's like sometimes it will come across as if, you know, you're not getting the information that you need, or you're hitting a wall of resistance and things like that. But it could be, it's going to be down to the fact that people don't understand what you need to, what you need to understand. So it's about you educating what you need to understand, which then helps them to understand what their needs are, because they may not have connected the dots that actually by doing something over here is going to affect over here, or they need to consider these things. So by having those conversations, you're helping each other, you know, to come together, to get to that consensus, so you're all on the same page. And what you'll often find is if you go through that process and you're working collaboratively with the stakeholders, you feel you've got a good understanding of their needs, you feel that they've got a good understanding of what you need, and there's visibility, you don't think that, you know, you're missing things or whatever. If you're still finding that you're hitting that wall of resistance and you're sitting there kind of scratching your head thinking that this is just like a no-brainer, why are people not jumping to this kind of thing? Mm-hmm. It'll be predominantly one of three reasons, because we are human beings. If we were robots, you could just, you know, you just change the code in. You are going to be happy with this and get on with it, but we're not, we're humans. Mm-hmm. So it'll be one of three things. And then as a safety professional, understanding these three things then helps you to know what your next step is, how you move that. It's similar to project professionals. If we understand it, we can recognize it, we can then change our approach to do something to address it. And those three things, it's quite simple, because we are human, we're not, you know, we're quite simple creatures. It's either that they don't get it, so they don't understand the change, they don't like it, or they don't trust it. So if they don't get it, that again, it just comes back to this education, awareness piece, more conversation. You need to bring it to life. It's, you know, you're still talking in Japanese per se to the person. You need to somehow make it to relate to them. If they don't like it, you need to take a step back, you know, and have a think about why that might be. Is it because this change is going to change their job? Does it apply a level of risk to them that makes them really nervous? Is it not them? Is it the fact that they're worrying about their people? Do you know what I mean? Or is it just the uncertainty because we haven't got all of the answers at the moment? And, you know, some of the answers are going to kind of drip feed through as we progress through the journey. Or if it could be that they've just got change fatigue, which often happens because where organizations are having to constantly change to what's going on in the environment, people can get fed up of it. It's a bit of a, oh God, I don't like this, I just want to come in and get on with my day job. But obviously if we don't constantly change the business to meet the needs of the outside world, the day job's not going to be there after so long. And that's quite scary, but sometimes that message might need to be shared to get people to kind of wake up and realize we have to do this. And the third one, they don't trust it. Again, take a step back. Have they been burnt before? Have they been promised things before and it hasn't happened? Have they been told that, you know, these things are going to bring about with them all these benefits, they're going to make their working day much better or whatever it might be, and then in reality it's not brought any of the benefits, it's not made their day better, in fact it's made it harder, and, you know, X, Y, and Z. Do they normally have a 3-step process and now you're expecting them to do a 20-step process, but they're concerned about, but you're not paying me more, you're not doing this, you're not doing that, so they don't trust what's going on, it doesn't quite tally. Or it might be the fact that they don't trust the leader that's talking about it because they don't feel that there's integrity there, or that there's a real level of understanding from the leadership about what's actually happening on the ground. And therefore, if they don't really understand what's going on, how do they really know what they're proposing is the right thing? Mm-hmm. Or it might be that they've, you know, engaged with the leadership before and they've been burnt kind of thing. So all of these are human reactions. They're all behavioral reactions as a result of uncertainty. So again, understanding where your stakeholders sit, because your stakeholders are everyone, because that's another key point. We often focus on our stakeholders being the key business people that are in, you know, being changed by it, but stakeholders are actually everybody. So if we understand where all our stakeholders sit, then we can start to think about what's our engagement strategy, what's the communication needed, do we need to do some training workshops, you know, or whatever it might be, do we need to go and have certain conversations with certain individuals, or do we need to have some quick wins if they don't trust it, for example. What are some quick wins that we can start to kind of like show that actually we do mean what we say kind of thing, and this is what you're going to see come in. So it's about taking on different approach, you know, different strategies then to kind of move people along that kind of change curve, for which everybody has to go through. It's just how quickly we go through it. Some will go through it in the space of 2 minutes, you know, so moving from that kind of, I don't like it, this kind of change awareness piece where you might not necessarily get it, through to that kind of the experience where they're actually going through it, to the point where they're actually, you're coming out the other side now, I'm learning, I'm doing things differently. Oh, this is actually good. I do like it. You know, my day job's become better. Moving people through that could take a matter of minutes, could take a matter of months, years. For some people, you never will. But what you kind of like, your 80-20 rule, aren't you? As long as you're progressing with 80% of people and things like that, you'll have momentum. If you're not, then that resistance will shut you down. And unfortunately, resistance is one of the biggest killers of projects. Because as soon as you start hitting that wall of resistance, things start to stop, which means you've got to spend more time, more money, more effort in trying to move it, which means you're not spending time, money and effort on doing the project activity, which is going to drive the benefits and the outcome that you want to. So eventually they start to stall, and that just adds fuel to your kind of resistance plans fire, if you know what I mean. Well, it's not doing what you say anyway, is it, kind of thing. So it just kind of, it just helps stopping it. So really, when you mentioned about the purpose and we talked about leadership and the vision, that's why being connected, engaging with your people and working with your people and really understanding what's going on and understanding the needs of your stakeholders is so important to the success of projects. And again, if your project is either delivering safety aspects or safety professionals are involved in an aspect of a wider program of activity, that's why it is so important to understand that, because especially in the safety sense, I think you probably are hit with that kind of historical stigma kind of thing of, oh, what, we've just got to do it because you've got a checklist that says we've got to do it. And actually what you're trying to do is get to, well, actually, no, I'm saying do this because it's going to make your life better, or it's going to make things easier, or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But we have to continue to innovate, don't we? We have to continue to do things differently, to work smarter, not harder, so that we can remain competitive and valid.
Mm. There's so much value in kind of what you're talking about there. And I think you can sometimes get so excited about a project, you're going to get caught up in it and forget to really go and talk to those stakeholders. I've literally experienced this recently, and that what a project we're doing is like really cool, really innovative, really exciting, and trying to solve a problem that we in safety have been struggling with for a phenomenally long time. So when we got the client ring us up and said, look, here's my idea, here's the scope, I reckon you'd love to do it. We kind of did something that I always say to people, don't do. We went into like solution mode before we spoke to the stakeholders to understand the problem. So we kind of put this whole solution together. Yeah, boom, boom, boom. We're in solution mode. We had done no work on understanding the problem other than the conversations between me and our primary contact with the client and also our own knowledge and our own experience. But we hadn't understood it from the perspective, as you were talking about, kind of diversity of four, I suppose, on the shop floor, is to like all of those stakeholders. Yes, the problem exists, but in their eyes, what does that problem look like?
Exactly. And that honestly is not an uncommon thing. That happens scarily more regular than you'd realize. You know, people fix on the solution before they really understand the problem. And that might be because there's this new shiny model and it's like, well, we've got to have that. Or it might be, well, everybody's using that technology or that platform, so we've got to use that. Or, you know, or it'll be certain stakeholders might have a real influence, and that's the kind of, they want to use these particular products or services because they've got a relationship with those suppliers, whatever it might be. But that is not uncommon. And I think as project professionals and safety professionals, what we have to do is, yes, we can get excited, and we want to get excited because excitement kind of builds the momentum that gets change to happen. So we don't want to lose that, but we also need to stay a little bit grounded in the sense of, this is great, guys, but can we just take a step back?
Yeah.
What actually is the problem? What do you actually need? And then work out, because quite often what you find is, the solution is not going to fix the problem. So you see it happen a lot in organizations. They'll bring in like certain technology or, you know, a certain supplier or a certain product to do some, to do X. They'll put it live and it doesn't do that. Yeah. So then they'll need to go and buy something else or do something else. And again, by doing that, your people on the ground then, the people that are actually using the new technology, are kind of, you're losing the kind of credibility, because it's like, oh, well, so you've just spent 6 months bringing this in, nobody listened, and it doesn't do the job, and it's making my job harder. Now they want to do it again with something else. So you're kind of, and that's where you get the resistance. That's where you get this, you don't trust it or you don't like it, because people have previously had these, you know, they've been burnt by it. So understanding those needs are really critical. And, you know, and the other thing point you made before that, James, was where you were talking about, you know, you get so excited with your projects and, you know, it kind of consumes you. Again, that's another, you know, common thing for people. It does. And I think if you work in the kind of project kind of environment, then you get a buzz from that. You know, it's like the kind of peaks and the kind of the 11th hour issues and things like that, and the kind of environment, you've got to have a lot of resilience, because it is, it's fast, it's paced, it's pressurized, there's a lot going on. And what happens is it becomes part of our lives, and then we forget that other people in the organization don't really understand it to the same degree that we understand it, because we think that everybody understand it because it's part of everybody's lives, but it isn't. All of these other people have got, they might understand to be aware of it a little bit, but they've got all these other things going on that are part of their lives because they're running different aspects of the business. Mm-hmm. So their focus is not going to be the same. So again, it's about having those conversations. It's about that regular engagement to make sure that everybody really understands what's going on. Because then when you do need people, when you need to bring people in to support, it might be to remove, you know, resolve issues or an escalation, whatever it might be. If they understand, they'll be more supportive and you'll be able to get that help quicker, preventing your project from stalling.
Yeah. And what made me think about that kind of that example, that story, was when you were talking about like people that don't like it, don't get it, don't trust it, right? And so we've done a couple of workshops in our initial workshops in the starting project, and we were starting to get some, the majority of people are really positive about it, but we're just picking up, I was just picking up comments, like little bits and bobs. We're like, yeah, I really like this, but I'm worried about this. I really like this. I'm kind of taking loads of notes every workshop, loads of notes. And then we have one particular person who was like, from the outset of the workshop, was just not in for this at all. Like, didn't want to be there. And I think it has taken me years to be able to have dealt with that, not emotionally. So I was enabled, because I've been mentored by amazing people and gone through all the experience, I've been able to, in that moment, try to tell myself, like, maybe allow the emotions in my head to go, this guy's a prick, blah, 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 but actually not say it out loud, just maybe think it, deal with it, but then swallow it and go, why is he acting like this though? Because he doesn't like it, he doesn't get it, or he doesn't trust it. Why doesn't he do that? And we were able then to because we'd had that kind of process in our brain, enabled us to understand that, hang on a minute, we've gone 100% into solution mode here, and we have not gone on the shop floor to understand what the problem is. So we rang the client up and said, I want to change what we're doing here, and I want to go out and spend some time on the shop floor, and this is why. And when we kind of said it to the client, he was like, love that, totally get it.
And I think that, and that is great, and that's the exact point, isn't it? It's like people's behavior is an emotional response to things, and nobody gets up in the morning and thinks, I'm going to be purposely disruptive at work today, or I'm purposely going to withhold information or whatever. I'm going to purposely do a bad job. Nobody wants to do that. But people sometimes behave in a way, subconsciously, they may, or consciously, you know, they may not be aware of it, but they're behaving in a way because of that emotional kind of like impact of what's going on. They might not even recognize they're doing it, and that's why we, as the professionals that are kind of like facilitating, you know, in your situation, those workshops, we need to recognize that PDQ so that we can start to adapt our approaches and our responses, you know, to what is going on in that room, because otherwise you'll lose your audience. Yeah. And you're not achieving the, you know. And so I love the fact that you recognized it. I love the fact that you faced into your client then by saying, we need to chat, and you changed your approach. And I would, without even knowing any more of this story, I'd bet my bottom dollar on the fact that the outcome then that you delivered to that organization was better as a result of you standing up and saying, stop, we need to change approach, than it would have been if you'd have just carried on. Because you would have got people more bought into it, you would have learned more, it would have informed the solution more, so the outcome would have been better.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you know, because it's literally a live project. So we're...
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, it's still case study on it, but I bet you it does.
It literally happened like a matter of weeks ago. And I'm not saying it to kind of sound like, oh, I'm amazing and I enabled myself to stop in the moment.
What was the voice about there?
I just like, you know, when you get those people that like, there was this.
What with those voices, you mean?
Those voices. And they're just like, yes, and I was so amazing. But like, that's.
There's
that's,
no I in team, James. Remember that.
Yeah. And that's, there is an M and an E though, which is me.
Oh, God. There's no hope for some people.
But that's not why I said that story. I'm very conscious that it could have come across that. And that's not why I said it. What I wanted to kind of make. That was really difficult for us, like, yeah. And it was really fucking scary. Like, I was shitting myself because I was like, well, this now is like, it's a big project. And like, financially speaking, it was like, this is huge for us as a business. If we piss this client off, because we're basically ringing up and saying, we've screwed up here, and we need to change tack, that client could have gone, hang on a minute, you could have reacted negatively. And it was really, really scary. And I think being able to just, it comes back to what you were saying earlier, is understanding what is our purpose, what do we value, and what are we trying to achieve here?
Yeah. And again, your workshops are outputs. Yeah. If you think about the kind of principle of what I talked about, it's not the outcome. It's a set of outputs that you're going through to give you information to help you achieve the outcome. You've gone through the process and you found out actually we need to do something else. And again, it's about language and mindset. So you've straight away said there about, you know, shit, we've made a mistake, your words. Not mine. Whereas I'm seeing that as it is how you position that and your language. So actually, have you really made a mistake, or have you gone in to do a workshop and that workshop has informed you of a way of working to move forward with? And you therefore have rang the client and said, following having conversations with your team, we've now decided that the best approach to achieve the outcome that you want to will be to do X, Y, and Z, which is slightly different to what we'd originally thought. But this is as a result of the information that we've got today. So this is really good, because it means, you know, this is how it's going to help us. So it's not a, so again, it's just the way you look at things. And it comes, I said earlier on, it's like some people deem when things go wrong as failure, whereas I like to look at it as a learning. You know, you've not failed, you've learned, you won't do that again. So now you go on and you try the next thing, kind of thing. So again, it's just, but some of that comes with confidence within the ability of what you're trying to achieve. So as long as you can stand true to your core and always stand there and say, I've got the best intentions of my clients at heart, you know, then you know you're doing the right thing, aren't you? Yeah. Some people will have just sat back and said, do you know what? The client have said this is what they want, so I'm just going to roll with it. My question would be, but do the client really know what they want? Or is it just the fact that the client think they want this because they don't understand the needs or the other options, or they don't have your knowledge and expertise to be able to pull that all together to see that there are different things that they could do? And so part of our job, I do think, as professionals, is not to say yes, you're right, or no, you're wrong, but it's to help our clients think about things differently, okay, so that they can make a more informed decision. The answer might be the same at the end, but at least you can then walk away knowing that, you know, we've all options have been looked at.
And I think one of the things I wanted to pull out, or the reason I kind of thought is really important to kind of tell that story, is because I really like when you said about the 80-20 rule, I kind of wrote that down here, and I really like that. There's a simple way of doing it, but like I wanted to kind of say, you know, those 20%, whilst yeah, they might just not buy into it, there's still a reason they're not buying into it, of which you can learn from.
Yeah.
That guy wasn't buying into our workshop, and he was saying, like, I get it, and there is some warrant to this, but like there's this and that, and to be able to stop in the moment, which I don't think I'd have been able to do like 5 years ago, I'd have took that quite emotional, quite personal. I wouldn't have been able to do that. And I think this took a lot of work to kind of get there, a lot of mentors and help being able to get us there, but ultimately being able to swallow that emotional reaction, listen to that guy to say, this is why I don't like it, it enabled us to then take that next step. And again, not saying that in a, oh, this is how enlightened we are.
Until you go, oh, this is how enlightened we are, no one's thinking that. Well, I'm not, as I'm listening to you anyway. Did you like my copy interview then?
Yeah, it was flawless. it was like I was watching myself for a second there.
Oh, good. What are you saying? Do I need to get to the beauticians if we missed that?
Oh, bloody hell. So yeah, that was kind of, I mean, I just wanted to be able to pull out that kind of just being able to listen to those diverse perspectives and opinions, I think is really important, even if they're not aligned with your perspective and opinion.
Yeah. And the more diverse thought you can bring into the room, the better the result you're going to get.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to say. And as much as it's like you say, you know, swallow that emotional reaction. When people might not always like our ideas or our ways of working or what we're proposing, but that it's professional. It's not that they're saying they don't like you as an individual. It's about, for some reason, that idea doesn't float that person's boat. So try and understand why that is. There could be a very valid reason, in which case work with them around that, or it could just come back down to these kind of more these emotional points that we talked about, the one of the three, in which case is there a way you can approach it to respond to that? Or it might be the fact that they're going to be one of the 20% that no matter what you do, what hurdles you jump through, they're not going to be happy. And I'm not saying we just write these people off, because we don't. We still want to engage. We still want to understand their views, their opinions. We still want their input, because they're just as bad. Every person is just as important. But it's about us recognizing that we're never going to get 100% of everybody liking everything. So to be able to move forward, which is what we need in the safety and the project world, you have to move forward. Sometimes it's agreeing to disagree, if that makes sense. And our jobs is to find a way of moving everybody forward rather than stagnating, because that doesn't help anybody.
I think there's a lot of sense in that. There's a lot of sense, but I am very aware that I've kept you for a very long time. So you'd be grateful. I'll send you a past 45 minute plaque, which apparently,
yes. No idea. Oh, God, it's like I've just won the business awards or something. watch this space, James. I'm after you. I'm after your nomination.
Yeah, made it past the 45. yeah, apparently that's a thing, don't I? But anyway, well done. That was
The question will be, do you doctor it to less than 45 minutes?
No, we don't doctor at all. Right. The only thing we would cut out is if some of you asked us to cut something out. Even then we might disagree with you and leave it in.
Your prerogative, I suppose. I did sign up to that in the T's and C's. I do recall seeing something about that.
And I won't say what guest, but we've had arguments with a guest when they've said, I want you to cut that out. And I was like, well, you shouldn't have said it. No, was like, well, you shouldn't have fucking said it, should you? And it was a tense conversation, let's put it that way. Liz, what I really like about Liz is there's so much in that that you're talking about, which is what safety is talking about in our evolution and our identity crisis. And you're not from a safety background at all. You know, probably avoided it like the plague throughout your
career. I won't tell you why.
But there's so much in that that I'm like, yeah, that's the same language we're talking about. That's the same thing we would say. That, and there's so much that aligned to that, which is why when we first chat, I was like, yeah, you would be really good to get on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. But maybe we do a part two months down the line. Maybe when you fit your live project that you're working on at the moment, maybe we catch up and see how it went and have a chinwag over that.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. Yeah, we'll have a chat about that. Liz, if people are like, oh my God, I need Liz in my life. She needs to come on this project, or, you know, just coach me or whatever. Can you just give us the audience kind of an insight into what 144 can do for businesses or professionals? And then if they're interested in that, how they can come and find some more about it.
Yeah, no problem. So, standard platforms, really. So we've got our website, which is 144consultancy.co.uk. We also have a LinkedIn page for 144. I also have my own LinkedIn page. So you can join us on there and see what's going on as well. But fundamentally, the services that we offer are all about helping businesses and individuals to realise their full potential, really, so that they continue to develop and grow, to really prevent them from becoming extinct. Now, I know that sounds very extreme, but it happens, doesn't it? We were talking about some big brands that you don't see anymore. But, you know, used to make up our teenage lives when you used to go and hire a DVD at the weekend or something with a popcorn. You know, these things don't happen anymore, and it's because they haven't evolved as the world has changed. So 144 helps with those kind of things. So we provide business coaching. So that's looking at providing business advice, guidance and support. If there are issues within the business or potential opportunities that you want to explore, we'll come in, have a look, provide, you know, recommendations, and then we can either remain within the business to help deliver it, i.e. a project if it requires a change, or we can help build the capability of your staff to be more sustainable to change by delivering project management training. So we are an accredited training provider of the project management profession, which is the Association for Project Management. They are the UK chartered body. So we offer their training, which is professional development. There are qualifications at the end of it. We also provide business coaching services. So that can be one-on-one with business owners or leaders or members of the team, you know, whoever would benefit, really, or team coaching. You know, if you're looking at how do we build more of a team, how do we become more effective as a team, how do we reach that kind of high performance state, so again, we do that. We also help with other kind of business improvement activities around, you know, so workshops around what's like you've just talked about, really, James. So one of the particular methods we particularly like is around taking an appreciative inquiry approach to things. So what works well within your business, and then looking at how do we adopt more of that in other areas to make other areas work just as well. So yeah, if anybody is of needs any, just wants to talk anything through, they want to have a look at their strategy and or pull together a strategy, not assuming that everyone has one, start to look at what those business goals are. What does success look like, and how are they going to start moving towards them? Be more than happy to help.
Awesome. Amazing. Thank you very much, Liz. You'll give us your links and stuff, or we've got the links already, and we'll put them all in the description below so that people can get the links to your website and your LinkedIn as well. So thank you very much for that, Liz. And thanks for coming on. So I've really enjoyed it.
No, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. I've really enjoyed it as well. It's been quite fun. Looking forward to part two. No pressure.
Okay, peeps, I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you want to find out more from Liz or at 144, go to the links in the description. If you want to connect to LinkedIn, whatever, all the links in the description below. If you want some help with safety, fire safety, cultural safety stuff, then check out riskfluentltd.com. We would love to work with you. And thank you all for being on this journey and being part of helping us achieve our purpose as an organization to rebrand safety. I hope you enjoyed this episode, got something out of it. Otherwise, I'll catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.